Hey, welcome to Coffin Cast episode 4. Are we at 4? Yeah, we're at 4. I'm trying to forget last week. We're at 4. This is Kristen. Welcome if this is not your first episode. Thanks for still being here. I appreciated it. If it is your first episode, please go to the very first one just to get an idea of what you're in for. Disclaimer I give at the beginning of every episode, I'm not a professional. There's going to be weird pauses, there's going to be there's going to be strange breaths. Out of nowhere, I'm going to fumble words. Disclaimer 2, this is not a happy subject, it's dark. And this particular story is very, very dark. And it's very disturbing, so if you're, you know, highly sensitive person, maybe mosey on over to a puppy podcast or something. I don't know, that sounds like a good idea. Anyway, so the story this week is entitled The Man That Got Away, or as I would like to call it this, but I can't because of sensory reasons, I'd like to call it Karma's a Bitch. So karma, what is karma? Karma is the belief that what you put out, you get back. So for instance, if you're not a good person, you get not good things back to you. If you are a good person, good things will happen to you. You know, it's like this scale of the universe kind of thing, I guess. I don't know that a scale is a good analogy for it, but it's like an investment system, as it were, you know. Help an old lady cross the street. Good karma. Bump into that old lady, and as she falls, leave her on the ground. That's bad karma. You get it. I personally have had a hard time with believing in karma. I've had people come into my life that have done emotional harm to me and to my family, and I still see these people thrive. Now, that's, you know, a public front that they're thriving. Could not be, it might not be the same thing behind closed doors, but it's always like, okay, when is their coming? When's their karma coming? And people, you know, have told me all the time, don't worry, karma will get them. Karma's coming for them, don't worry. And then it never happens. So I've had a hard time believing in it. And I like to think I'm a good person, but I know in the past I've done some not great things. But I've always believed I've had good intentions. And, you know, my life's not terrible, but it's really not great. So, I mean, you know, I'd like to think that good things are coming my way, but I know, you know, I'm probably paying for something I've done that I didn't intend to do or that I did and wasn't thinking about it. So, you know, karma has been a weird thing for me because I haven't believed in it all that much. But I was looking for a story that wasn't necessarily happy or really funny, but something that at the end was satisfying, because the first episode was sad. Second episode was very sad. Third episode was just a mess. I don't even know what that was. You can just ignore it. Nobody listened to it anyway. But this story, I think, shows karma as textbook as it can get. And it's, the story itself, as it goes, is frustrating and angering. But in the end, there is something so satisfying that happens that it could only be in a movie or a Lifetime thriller or something like that. So with that, I would like to introduce you to somebody I've learned a lot about this week. Not a fan. His name is Mel Ignato, and this is his death story. With every one of my episodes, at the beginning, I like to kind of do an aside to explain who the person was behind the story, behind the incident that happened to them. You know, to give you an idea of who they were aside from what happened to them. Because I just think it's the right thing to do. That being said, Mel isn't getting that. good old Mel gets nothing from me as far as that goes, because I'm not allowed to say certain words, I don't think. I think I'm kind of limited in the verbiage I can use to describe bad people. I'll just say that he's an expletive for human excrement. He's a bad human being. I don't think I'm remiss in saying that. I don't have to be objective. This is a podcast. It's not a news thing. I can give my opinions. That's my opinion. And I also think once you hear this, you'll realize it's also fact. That being said, there is still a victim in this story. So that victim is Brenda Schaefer. Brenda was born April 25th, 1952, in the Louisville, Kentucky area. She was the youngest of a family of six Catholic kids. I don't know how to say this right without sounding like an idiot. She was the youngest in a Catholic family of six. There we go. I got it. I'm proud of myself. By all accounts, she was a sweet woman. Her family adored her. She had a lot of friends. Her employers loved her. She was a good lady. Beautiful lady, too. You can look up pictures of her. She was so pretty. She just looked like a nice woman. She oozed niceness. That was her aura. Also, one thing about her is that she was pretty naive. She went to Catholic schools her whole life. As a former Catholic, I get it. You get hang-ups about things like sex and intimacy. You feel guilty about things like that. And she definitely had that Catholic mentality about sex. So part of that is, you know, she got married young. And she had a big issue with having sex with her husband. They went to therapy, didn't work. So she ended up divorcing that husband. She got into a relationship after, got close to marriage as well. But he was an alcoholic and wasn't completely nice to her. But he was always apologetic and she loved him. So after that relationship ended, she ended up moving back home and taking care of her mother, Essie, who had lupus. Also, she was a medical assistant. Some places say she was a medical assistant, others say she was a nursing assistant. I'm not sure the difference of the two, but the main story that I, you know, took this off of, which was American Justice, said she was a medical assistant. And when Bill Curtis says something, you believe it. Damn it, because he's amazing. Oh, I just said damn it. Okay, I guess I can say bad words. Okay. So yeah, when Bill Curtis says something, you believe it. So she was made to take care of people. She was a medical assistant. She took care of her mother. Her job in life was to take care of other people. So she was living with her mother. She was 34 years old. And this man, 50-year-old man, started taking an interest in her. He would give her gifts, you know, shower her with affection and attention, and seemed to just treat her very well. The two became engaged after 3 months of dating. So who was this man, you ask? It was our good old friend Mel Ignato. Piece of trash extraordinaire. So let's get into his story and how he factors into Brenda's story and how she factors into his. So just a quick little upfront here. I have allergies really bad tonight, so I'm going to try not to sniffle too much into the mic. I will do my best. I apologize if I do. But let's go ahead and get into the events that led up to the demise of Mel Ignato. So Sunday, September 25th, 1988, Brenda's mother, Essie, had expected her daughter home after a date with her fiancé, good old Mel. When she didn't return by 3 a.m., there was some concern because Brenda was really good about being where she was supposed to be when she says she's going to be there, that sort of thing. So when she didn't return by 3 a.m., her mother reached out to Mel and asked if he knew where she was. He said he hadn't seen her since she dropped him off at 11:30. So he ended up calling 911 and reported her missing. Before dawn, her car was found abandoned, vandalized, the radio was stolen, right rear tire was flat. So if it was a... One thing that's kind of interesting is if her tire had just gone flat and she had to leave her car by the side of the road, she was a half a mile from her house. She was on her home turf, so it wouldn't make sense that she wouldn't just walk home. So that kind of threw up some red flags for police. Her family kind of gathered at her mother's home, kind of held vigil, hopeful that Brenda would walk through the door and everything would be fine. However, her brothers who were there were pretty sure she was gone. Their mother was hopeful. She believed that she would walk through the door any minute, but their brothers were pretty sure that something had happened and it wasn't good. Her brother's girlfriend at the time was super close with Brenda and was kind of like a part of the family. And she confided in her sister's... Her brother's... Hold on, let's try this again. Brenda confided in her brother's girlfriend that she was going to be breaking up with Mel because he had started to sexually and physically abuse her and pressure her to do things she didn't want to do. She also told a co-worker that when he became unemployed from his job, he got more sexually aggressive and controlling, and he would actually drug her, and she would wake up with no clothes on. She also told this co-worker that one incident, he actually used chloroform to relax her into being sexual with him because, in his words, she was too uptight. Both the girlfriend and the co-worker did go to police with this information, so police began to take a closer look at Mel Ignato. So when police did go to his home to question him, he had notes prepared the whole day written down, and as police dove into his history further, there was patterns of sadism, and he was prone... God, I can talk good. He was prone to controlling behavior. They interviewed his ex-wives, neighbors, and an ex-girlfriend. The night she disappeared, it came out that she was going to be breaking up with Mel and return the ring as she reignited a relationship with an ex-boyfriend. Now, at this point, Brenda was just a missing person. Even though the police suspected foul play and Ignato, she wasn't considered dead yet. It was just she was missing and they needed to find her. So here we are, 5 months after Brenda Schaefer was reported missing. There's nothing new. No new evidence, no clues, no nothing, no body, no nothing. So police are kind of stuck. They end up going and retracing their steps, going back to people they had interviewed previously, and then going back to, in particular, one of Mel Ignato's ex-girlfriends, Marianne Shore. So Marianne Shore and Mel Ignato dated for 10 years prior to his relationship with Brenda. Marianne was kind of a frumpy lady, big poofy brown hair, not very attractive. I mean, I have no room to talk, but compared to Brenda, she was not a very pretty woman. So when Marianne was interviewed by police again, she was very short with them, giving them yes or no answers, and seemed kind of deceptive about her relationship with Mel. So they ended up giving her a polygraph, to which she failed. When they told her she failed, she said she was not going to cooperate any further. So that kind of drew some suspicions from the police, and they ended up surveilling her. I don't know if that's the right word. They did surveillance on her. Let's go with that. They did surveillance. They watched her. That very night, she went over to Mel Ignato's place. Don't know what they talked about, but she was over there. So, the next day, police call her in to interview again. They start insulting her, pushing her, about, you know, her relationship with Mel, saying things like, you're fat, you're ugly, Brenda was skinny and beautiful, why would he want you now? You're gonna die, he's going to kill you because you weren't anywhere near as good as Brenda was. But she didn't break, she didn't do anything. She kept it tight, man. So they ended up getting her on bad checks that she wrote. So she was put away for a little bit just to keep her in one place so they could watch her and they knew where she was. Now, after 6 months go by, Brenda's boss at the family clinic she worked at, Dr. Spaulding, bless his heart, he believed he knew that Brenda was dead. He believed it in his heart. He believed that Mel Ignato was the one that killed her. He told police this several times. He said he hated the man. He wanted them to get him. Of course, you know, you have to have evidence to do these things, and they didn't have anything yet. So Dr. Spaulding, again, bless his heart, everyone should have a boss this good. He sent an anonymous letter to Mel Ignato saying he was going to murder him if he did not produce Brenda's body within 2 weeks. Good old Mel, instead of producing a body, decided to go to the police. So there was a huge trial. It ended up being kind of a mini trial for Mel Ignato. Like, the prosecutors questioned him a little bit if he did this, and he said once again that he had nothing to do with the murder of Brenda Schaefer. Dr. Spaulding ended up only having a $300 fine. And Mel Ignato was still not arrested. So now we're 11 months into the thing. Police decide they need a grand jury because they're not getting anywhere. So police kind of had this plan in the back of their mind. You know, Mel clearly, even though he's getting bad publicity for this and people are starting to hate him and, you know, he's been on trial, he's been on TV and stuff, police believe that he is eating this shit up. Pardon my French. They believe that he is totally into this. Any publicity is good publicity in his mind. So they say, hey, you know, why don't you go before this grand jury and clear your name? You know, that's the best way to do this. You'll definitely clear your name. And he agrees. So, as per usual, he denied any involvement. He did admit to resuming a sexual relationship with Marianne Shore shortly after Brenda's disappearance. With that information, they subpoenaed Marianne Shore and got her to speak in front of the grand jury. So, how they kind of got Shore on things is she said that she'd only seen Brenda once in her life, and then they asked her another question, and she goes, well, the last time I saw Brenda Schaefer, and as soon as she said it, she knew she said something wrong, because she was just proven to lie on the stand, because prosecutor goes, the last time, I thought you'd only seen her once. The woman got up and ran out of the grand jury room, so she knew she messed up. So she was caught lying. So the pressure was definitely on now. So now we're at 16 months after Brenda Schaefer has been missing. And it seemed like Shore was under enough pressure that she might confess soon. So she was given a deal. Instead of being considered an accomplice or anything, she would get tampering with evidence instead of murder if she gave up the location of the body and information she had on the night that Schaefer died. And, to her credit, Marianne Shore accepted. So Shore begins to give up the ghost, as it were. She said that a month before the actual murder took place, Mel and she met in the woods behind her house, where Mel began to dig a grave. Why a month before? That's weird, but at least it proves that he intended to kill Brenda. He planned it. So, that's something. The night before the murder, he brought rope, black garbage bags, duct tape, a camera and film, and a bottle of chloroform. One weird thing is they actually did a scream test throughout Marianne Shore's entire house. They would go to different rooms and she would scream to see if anybody outside could hear the screams. They found that the only way they would be able to not be heard was if they stayed in the living room. So Brenda was brought to Marianne Shore's house under the guise of showing a friend of Mel's her jewelry that he's purchased for her. He's like, I just want to do this quick stop. Let me show you, my friend, some of the jewelry we bought, because I told her how pretty it was. I wanted to show her. So, I don't know. That's weird. But she believed him, and that's how she ended up in Marianne Shore's home. When they got there, the door was locked behind her. And that was it. So when they, she was, sorry, this part's a little hard. Ignato told Shore she was going to need to take pictures of what he did. So he ran out a list of all the things he intended to do to Brenda. And as he committed each act upon Brenda, he checked them off the list, like he was doing some step-by-step whatever. It was sick. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, because the story, while it's sad, it's not about Brenda. This story is about Mel. So I'll go into vague details about what happened, because it's very upsetting. But some of it's important enough that you need to know what kind of man this story is about. So, Mel tied Brenda to a glass coffee table. That is important. A glass coffee table in Shore's living room, and did horrific things to her, such as rape, sodomy, beat her with a fraternity paddle. He hit her over and over again. He, like I said, raped her over and over again. This happened over hours. She was tied to this glass coffee table. And this was all done while Shore snapped pictures of it. So this woman is watching another woman get basically tortured, and she's snapping pictures. After a while, it did start to get to Shore, so she ended up walking out of the room. She did not witness Ignato douse a towel in chloroform and hold it to Brenda Schaefer's mouth until she finally died on that coffee table, that glass coffee table. So he then used a rope to tie her in a fetal position before putting her in the garbage bags and then buried her in the grave that he had made a month earlier. With all that, like I said, Shorn showed that he had intended to kill her. So one night, Shore was wired up. She agreed to use a wire to try to get some evidence of Ignato speaking about the murder. She got him to talk by saying that they were going to start developing in the woods behind the house, and she was worried that they were going to uncover the body. Mel, like, was yelling at her, saying, I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. You're not going to be fingered in this. I'll take care of it. But he never really gave himself away. So, Marianne Shore told them where the body was, and Phil, why do I call him Phil? That sucks, because I've gone so far. I'm not stopping. I called him Phil. Why did I call him Phil? I have no idea. Mel was arrested on January 10th, 1990, 16 months after Brenda had been, you know, oh God. Guys, I cannot start over at this point. I can't edit this out, so I'm just going to say 16 months after she was declared missing, he was arrested. January 10th, 1990. Later that day, Brenda's body was found exactly where Marianne said it would be. 6 months after that, Brenda was buried. Or no, that is not... Jeez! This is why we don't do this at night. This is why we do this during the day when we are awake. So, okay, rewind. She was not buried 6 months later. She was buried. 6 months after she was buried, her mother died. It was as if she gave up all hope now because her daughter had been buried. She didn't care anymore. She didn't want to live anymore. So 6 months after she was buried, Essie ended up dying. 6 months after that, her father died. So the Schaefer family lost a lot more than just Brenda. They lost their mother and their father in this short period of time, seemingly due to heartbreak. So you would think, with all the evidence they have, with the eyewitness statement, the body now, everything like that, this would be an open and shut case. Easy. Yeah, no, it wasn't. So, due to the dumpster fire that was the trial, somehow Ignato got off scot-free. He was acquitted. There was an eyewitness and a motive. But they had not found those photographs. Marianne Shore did not have the photographs. Ignato had them somewhere. But they'd looked everywhere in his home and in Shore's. Also, any physical evidence such as blood or semen had decomposed along with Brenda. So that kind of made things a little more difficult as well. Also, kind of screwed up things a little bit. Marianne Shore showed up to the trial when she was going to testify against him. Her hair was now blonde. She was wearing a super short skirt. She was acting kind of like aloof and like she didn't care. And she didn't act like she was feeling guilty about this at all. So jurors didn't find her credible in any way, shape, or form because of the act she put on. So basically the whole case fell apart. The defense started to suggest that she was the killer, and a lot of the jurors believed that possibly she was because of the way she was acting. So the jury of 8 men and 4 women decided after 6 hours that Mel Ignato was not guilty on all 7 counts. All 7 counts, nothing. The judge had written the Schaefer family later and said, "I still am unable to fathom how a jury could come to this decision." He also said, quote, "Whether in this world or the next, one day justice will be done." So with that, he had been in jail during the trial because he hadn't been able to post bail. So he was released on December 21st, 1991. When he was walking out of jail, cameras were, of course, there because he was the most hated man in this area. He said, "This is the greatest Christmas present I could ever receive." And Shore still ended up spending 5 years in prison for tampering with evidence. So she gave him up. She had to do her end of the plea deal. He's off doing whatever. He's living the high life. Great. So the pictures were still out there somewhere. The police knew Ignato would not have just destroyed them like he should have. He was keeping these as a trophy somewhere, but they couldn't figure out where. So his house had been sold while he was in prison, and the new owners, you know, they have nothing to do with this. The police had searched it twice already. They told the police they could not search it again. Enough was enough. It was their house now. Whatever happened there, none of their affair anymore. So they were getting the carpets replaced, and in a false heating duct, there were several canisters of undeveloped film, and the new owners ended up giving that over to the FBI. So the FBI developed those, and sure enough, there were the infamous photos of the acts being perpetrated upon Brenda by Mel Ignato. So great, they got the pictures. Herein lies the problem, however. In this country, we have a law called double jeopardy. It means that you cannot be convicted of a crime that you have already been previously acquitted on. In most cases, this is a good thing, because then prosecutors can't come back and keep trying and trying and ruining a possibly innocent person's life while they try to get a jury that agrees with them. Great. In this case, people in Louisville could not understand why police could not get Malignato now. They had photographic evidence. But that's the law, so he couldn't be tried again. But they could try him on perjury charges because he lied during his trial. Also, he lied during Dr. Spalding's trial for the making of terroristic threats. So he perjured in two separate court cases. So the first one, he would get a reduced sentence for 8 years if he made a public confession about what happened. So he admitted in court that he had sexually and physically abused Brenda at Marianne Shore's house and then murdered her using chloroform. He then turns to her family and says, and I quote, "But she died peacefully." What a cunt. So he got 2 years for time served when he was on trial previously, and then more time off for good behavior. So he ended up only serving 5 years. But then, right after that, he got another 6 years added on for the other trial that he perjured in. So a total of 11 years. So now we fast forward to September 2008. Malignato is now an old man, living alone. He's been out of jail for about 2 years now. His upstairs neighbor says that he can hear him crying all night, begging for Jesus to take him because he's in so much pain. And at some point, Malignato ends up falling into a glass coffee table. Remember the glass coffee table he tied his ex-girlfriend to and tortured her? He ends up falling into one and shattering it and cutting himself all over his arms, legs, head, body, everywhere. He is bleeding. The man crawls over broken glass to his kitchen where he ends up dying. Not sure how long he laid there. Hope it was a long time and he was in pain the whole time. But that's how he died. He fell through a glass coffee table. I think that's karma. In its most pure form. That's just me. Also, part of me, in my weird thinking, hopes that he was haunted. This is so stupid, but I'm gonna say it anyway. I kinda like the idea of it. Kinda Lifetime movie, thriller-ish. I hope that Brenda haunted his ass till the day he died. I hope that she startled him so bad that he fell into that glass coffee table. I hope she had something to do with it. Do ghosts exist? I don't know. But that's just my hope, that she had something to do with it. A girl can dream, right? So, that's the story there. So that's the end of Mel's story. Now you may be asking yourself, wait, there was another player in this Brenda Schaefer drama. What happened to good old Marianne? Well, Marianne died at the age of 54 in a hospice care facility of an undisclosed illness. Her family has not released what she died of. But assuming, you know, she was in hospice care, it was likely something terminal, long-term, that she needed extra care for. So, both of them, in the end, got what was coming to them, even though it probably took a lot longer than Brenda Schaefer's family or Louisville in general would have liked. So, that was episode 4. Much better than episode 3, if you ask me. Did you think so? I thought so. So, if you have any updates, any corrections, hit me up at Twitter, at CoffinCast, with a capital C. Again, that's CoffinCast with a capital C. Hit me up there. Just follow me. I'll follow you. It'll be like a mutual follow situation. That works out for everybody. I release, you know, when my episodes are going to come out. If I do one, like a mini episode, I'll put it on there. Things like that. Any links pertaining to any stories, even though I still haven't put up the Loretta Picard 911 call. I'm still thinking if I should do that or not. If I should, let me know and I will definitely do it. Also, if you have ideas for stories, hit me up. I'm doing an episode next week. Usually I know in advance what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing next week. So, I mean, I have, you know, lists of things I'd like to cover, maybe, still weighing my options, but I'd love to hear from you and what you want to hear about. So again, reach out on Twitter and I'll give you credit for any updates, corrections, and episode ideas. So that's the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening to CoffinCast. I appreciate it. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your boss, tell your mom, tell everybody. Hey, I need some listens. Let's do this, guys. So again, thank you for listening. This is Kristen. And remember, as always, life is a dream walking, but death is going home.